Hey everyone, welcome back. Ready for another deep dive?
Always ready to explore, especially when it comes to these fascinating biblical figures.
Today, we're going deep into the story of King Saul, you know, his dramatic fall from grace.
And the rise of young David, the shepherd who became king.
You know, you sent over some really interesting excerpts from Dr. Robert Chisholm's lectures on the books of Samuel.
Ah, yes. His insights on those books are always so thought-provoking.
Definitely. And I think we're going to uncover some pretty surprising stuff today, right?
Oh, for sure. These stories, I mean, they've resonated with people for centuries, and for good reason.
Yeah.
They get into, like, these timeless themes.
Obedience, judgment, what it really means to be chosen.
Exactly. So we're not just talking about some dusty old tales here.
No, not at all. These stories are really about leadership, faith, the consequences of the choices we make.
You know? Absolutely. And Dr. Chisholm really brings these ancient figures to life, you know, in his lectures.
He does. He does. We're focusing on his insights from Session 10 specifically, which covers chapters 15 and 16 of 1 and 2 Samuel.
Right, right. Dr. Chisholm starts by setting the scene with Saul, the first king of Israel, chosen by God, destined for greatness.
Okay, so far so good, right?
But his reign, well, it's marked by this constant struggle with obedience.
It's kind of tragic, isn't it? He has this amazing opportunity, this incredible potential.
But he seems to keep stumbling, like tripping over his own ambition almost.
Right. It really makes you think about the pitfalls of power, even power that's given by God. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And all that tension, it really comes to a head with the Amalekite situation. God commanded Saul to completely destroy the Amalekites.
Because of their past wickedness.
Right, and their attacks on the Israelites.
Okay, I have to say, this is one of those passages that always makes me pause. It's hard to reconcile with, well, how we understand morality today, right?
It's a very, very complex issue, no doubt about it. Dr. Chisholm really digs into the theological nuances of the time.
The idea of corporate sin, punishment, how the Old Testament presents, well, a very different view of warfare and divine judgment than, you know, what we're used to today.
Yeah, and he makes it very clear that this story, it's not meant to condone genocide or violence in our time.
Right. Super important to emphasize that. So how does Dr. Chisholm, you know, how does he use this story to speak to us today? I mean, what's the takeaway?
He uses it to illustrate this powerful point. And that is that our obedience to God, even when faced with tough commands, it's paramount.
It's about truly aligning our will with God's will.
Right. Not just going through the motions.
Not just offering sacrifices out of convenience.
It is
after. So the heart of it all is that true obedience, it has to come from genuine submission, genuine trust.
That's it.
And Saul, well, he missed the mark.
Yes. He disobeyed. He spared the Amalekite king Agag.
Oh, right, right.
And he kept the best livestock for himself.
But claimed it was all for sacrifices to God.
Right, claiming it was all for God. But, you know, as Dr. Chisholm points out, Saul's motives, well, they seem pretty self-serving.
Yeah, it's pretty transparent, right? And then, bam, enter the prophet Samuel, delivering one of the most powerful lines in all of Scripture. Right?
Oh, yeah. To obey is better than sacrifice.
Man, that gets to the very core of Saul's failure.
It does. Samuel's rebuke, it highlights how empty rituals are without true obedience, right? It's a message that's just as powerful today as it was back then.
I'm thinking about, you know, how often we might be going through the motions in our own lives, even in our faith.
Without truly surrendering to what God's asking of us.
Without fully aligning ourselves with his will. It's a powerful thought. So Saul's actions, they had some pretty serious consequences, right? What happened?
Well, we see God's deep regret, Samuel's anger, his sorrow, and ultimately the kingdom is torn away from Saul. You know, our choices, they have ripple effects.
Wow. It really makes you shudder thinking about the weight of those consequences. Okay, so what's next in this saga? God rejects Saul. Does that mean the story of Israel is over?
Oh, not at all. It's the beginning of a brand new chapter. Dr. Chisholm points out that even as God is turning away from Saul, he already has a replacement in mind.
Someone he describes as, what was it, a man after God's own heart.
Exactly.
Now that sets the bar pretty high.
It does.
I am curious to find out who this man after God's own heart turns out to be and how he comes into the picture.
Well, that's exactly where we're headed next. Get ready for a story of unlikely heroes, some dramatic twists, and a reminder that God's plans, well, they often unfold in ways we least expect.
I'm ready. Let's dive in.
So God's looking for this new king, right? Someone whose heart is truly aligned with his will.
Okay.
He sends the prophet Samuel to the house of Jesse.
Okay.
and instructs him to anoint the chosen one.
I can only imagine what that must have been like for Samuel, you know, knowing the weight of this decision. The future of an entire nation resting on his shoulders.
Absolutely. And at first, well, it seems like history might repeat itself.
How so?
Well, Samuel sees Eliab, Jesse's oldest son. He's immediately struck by, you know, his impressive stature, his commanding presence.
He's seeing another Saul.
Almost, yeah.
Those outward appearances, those things that we as humans, we just tend to get so fixated on.
Right.
It's not what God's looking for.
You got it. And just as Samuel is about to anoint Eliab, God intervenes. He says to Samuel, "Do not consider his appearance or his height. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart."
Man, that line always gives me chills. It's such a powerful reminder that God sees things so differently than we do. He's looking beyond the surface into the very depths of a person's character.
Yeah, it's a theme that runs throughout the Bible, isn't it? The idea that true worth, you know, it's not found in external attributes, but in the qualities of the heart.
Absolutely. But here's what I find interesting. When David, the eventual chosen one, is brought in from tending sheep, he's described as, you know, glowing with health, handsome, having beautiful eyes.
Right.
Isn't that a bit of a contradiction?
It's a great observation. And Dr. Chisholm points out that this detail has puzzled scholars for centuries. Why would the text emphasize David's good looks, especially after God has just made it clear that outward appearances are deceptive?
Yeah, it's almost like, what are you trying to tell us here? I mean, what are some of the explanations that Dr. Chisholm offers?
Well, some commentators, you know, they've suggested that God simply wanted a king who was both righteous and physically appealing. But as Dr. Chisholm points out, that explanation feels a bit too simple. You know what I mean?
It does. It doesn't quite capture the nuance and the complexity of the text.
Right. Exactly. Dr. Chisholm highlights the work of Walter Brueggemann, who offers a more intriguing interpretation.
Okay. I'm listening.
Brueggemann suggests that David's good looks are actually kind of a double-edged sword. They're a blessing, but they also represent a potential source of temptation and trouble down the line.
Ah, so almost like foreshadowing, hinting at the complexities of David's character and the challenges he'll face as king.
Exactly. It's a reminder that even those chosen by God, they aren't perfect. You know, they have their flaws, their weaknesses.
Right.
And their capacity for making mistakes.
Yeah, it's a theme that's just so relatable. Even thousands of years later. I mean, how often do we misjudge people based on their looks alone?
It's human nature, right?
Or maybe we put too much emphasis on outward appearances ourselves.
It's a human tendency, that's for sure. But this story, it challenges us to look deeper, to see beyond the surface, just as God does.
It also makes you think about the nature of choice, you know, human and divine. God chose David, not because of his looks or his lineage, but because he saw something special in his heart.
And it's interesting to note that at this point, you know, David, he isn't even on anyone's radar as a potential king.
Mm-hmm.
He's the youngest son out tending sheep.
Completely overlooked by his family and his community.
Completely overlooked.
Talk about an unlikely hero.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder how often we might be overlooking hidden potential in others.
Right.
Or even in ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we're so focused on those superficial qualities.
It's a good point. And, you know, as we go further into this story, we're going to see how God works through the seemingly ordinary, the overlooked, the unexpected, to accomplish his purposes.
Okay, so we've got this incredible contrast, right? David, the chosen king, quietly tending sheep.
Meanwhile, Saul, the rejected king, is, well, spiraling downward.
So what happens to Saul after, you know, he's rejected by God? What does that look like?
Well, Dr. Chisholm points out this really chilling detail. The text tells us that God's spirit actually departs from Saul.
Okay.
And an evil spirit begins to torment him.
Whoa. Okay. That sounds intense. I mean, almost like something out of a horror movie. It's like a literal demonic possession. What are we talking about here?
Well, it's interesting. You know, the Hebrew word that's translated as evil, it can also mean calamity or judgment.
Okay.
So some scholars, they interpret it as more of a representation of Saul's inner turmoil, you know, the psychological weight of his disobedience, his rejection.
So it could be like a literal demon, or it could be like a metaphor for Saul's just like mental and emotional state. Either way, it doesn't sound good.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
The key takeaway here, I think, is that Saul's disobedience, it has these consequences that go way beyond losing the throne, right?
Right.
It affects his well-being, his mental, his spiritual health.
It makes you wonder, are there ways in which, you know, we might be experiencing the evil spirit in our own lives?
Mm.
Not as a literal demon, but as like the fallout from our own bad choices, refusing to listen to that voice inside us, you know, that's guiding us toward what's right.
That's a powerful question, and one I think Dr. Chisholm would definitely want us to consider. Are we creating our own turmoil, you know, by holding on to things that we know are harmful, or by just refusing to get in line with God's will for our lives?
So Saul's in this tormented state. Mm-hmm. What happens next? Do they, like, call an exorcist?
Not quite. His servants, they recommend finding someone who's really skilled in music to kind of soothe him when these episodes of torment, you know, come upon him.
Music as therapy. That's something I can definitely relate to. There's something so powerful about music, just its ability to, you know, calm the soul, to kind of lift us out of those dark places.
Absolutely. And guess who they suggest?
Who?
One of the servants says, I have seen a son of Jesse of Bethlehem who knows how to play the lyre. He is a brave man and a warrior. He speaks well and is a fine-looking man. And the Lord is with him.
Wait, hold on. They're describing David as a warrior at this point. I thought he was just, like, out there with his sheep.
You're right. That's a good point. It does seem a little premature, right? Since we haven't actually seen David in any battles yet. Dr. Chisholm explains, though, that this is what's called proleptic language.
Proleptic. Okay, you're going to have to break that down for me. It sounds like something I should know, but I don't.
It basically means that the author is kind of giving us a sneak peek into the future. It's like those movie trailers that give away all the best parts. But in this case, it, like, creates anticipation. It foreshadows, you know, the hero that David will become.
Okay, got it. So it's not a contradiction. It's more like a literary technique to get us excited and, you know, hint at David's destiny.
Clever.
Exactly. Exactly. And remember, we find out later that David, he's already proven his bravery by, you know, defending his sheep from lions and bears. Oh, that's right. That's right. So, okay. So maybe he's not a seasoned warrior yet, but he's definitely not afraid of a challenge. This sets up such a fascinating dynamic. You know, you've got Saul, the rejected king. He's tormented, clinging to power. And then you have David, the chosen one.
Yeah.
He's entering Saul's court, like, with this aura of, you know, divine favor surrounding him.
It's almost like, you know, you're watching two ships on a collision course. You know it's going to be epic. You can't look away.
And all of this leads up to one of the most famous stories in the Bible, right?
Oh, yeah.
The showdown between David and Goliath.
That's right.
Wow. What a deep dive this has been. It's really reminded me that true leadership, it's not about outward appearances. It's not about holding on to power, but about aligning our hearts with God's will.
And it's definitely given us a lot to think about, right? The importance of obedience, you know, how our choices have consequences, and how God can work through, you know, even the most ordinary and unexpected things to accomplish his purposes.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us on this journey through the lives of Saul and David. And until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep seeking that voice, you know, that still small voice that guides us toward truth.